Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We're here to continue our recollections series. Today, we're going to talk about Tori Smith, not an unknown Raven. I think even by today's Ravens fans, most people have seen Tori Smith play. But here to talk about him with us is Ben Michal. Ben, how you doing?
Good. How you doing today, Ken?
Pleasure to have you on again, Ben. Tori Smith, so why did you pick him originally?
Tori Smith was one of my favorite Ravens, just kind of the context of the struggles to get a homegrown wide receiver. And that 2011 draft, Flacco was well established at that point already. And I really loved how they kind of got the local kid in the second round. We can get into the whole first round history with Ravens and wide receivers maybe, but Tori was an awesome player. He made a really, really fast impact. Looking back, it's kind of weird that he only was on the Ravens for 4 years. It kind of feels like he was on the team a little longer. He was just an exciting player. He was a great match with Flacco and the play style that Flacco had kind of developed there. Just a really fun guy to watch and had some really nice playoff moments for us.
Yeah, playoff and certainly some regular season moments as well, including one of his first games. But drafted number 58 overall, as you mentioned, kind of perfectly suited for Flacco, I thought was a great point there. Flacco had a very big arm. Smith had a lot of speed. Flacco could certifiably outthrow a defender, and Tori Smith could at least threaten to go get that football. And that often forced some defensive backs into some decisions they would have to make in terms of holding and taking a risk on a pass interference penalty. Something that Flacco certainly had a reputation for, Tori Smith deserves a lot of the credit, but Steelers fans just hate all Flacco could do is throw up the ball and hope for a pass interference call. And, you know, you look at their boards and they're all over that. What do you think about that? Did the proper amount of credit go to each of the players?
I think so. And it's funny that you mentioned the Steelers first, because there were two things I was really struck with when I was just going back and digging up all of the Tori Smith highlights and things I could find. One is he played really well against the Steelers. He had some really nice moments against the Steelers. There's obviously the game winner and the few plays before that that everybody probably knows about, but kind of littered with big plays against the Steelers. And I believe even with the Niners, he made a really big play, a long touchdown against the Steelers too. So Focusing on the Ravens alone, I agree. And he, you know, the other thing about Flacco and his connection is Flacco really gave him a chance a lot. Flacco was really throwing that thing to him. We're really used to like the Lamar style now and his kind of interesting relationship with the deep ball. But going back to this Tori Smith-Joe connection, it seemed like Joe never really had a guy like Tori before that. Nobody, you know, I think what the Mike Wallace probably a few years before that, maybe. But Tori was really that guy. Yeah, Mason. But I don't think of Mason always as a go route guy, whereas Tori could really have this great ability to really stack the defender there. He would kind of separate late. I mean, he's a 4-4 guy, but it was when he kind of accelerated that was so fascinating. And you can really see it. He can really get deep late in the route. And on some of these highlight plays, you'll notice it almost looks too easy sometimes. It's kind of like, how did he get so open? They maybe have him bracketed or a deep safety. And he just really had that special ability to get over the top.
You know, when they're even, they're leaving was never more true than with Tori Smith. And it almost is more valuable to be the kind of runner who runs away from a defensive back as the play's going on, as opposed to one who the defensive back is scared right from the immediate line of scrimmage that you're going to go deep on them, and that is always kind of giving ground in front. Now, there's value to that too. Don't get me wrong. Zay Flowers certainly has a lot of that ability, and so do others, that they just, they're frightened of him as soon as he gets on the field. Torrey Smith, it was, when he got into that extra gear deep against defensive backs, he was a pass interference play waiting to happen. I did want to mention, I think it's 2012, but I may be wrong, maybe 2011, he drew the three longest defensive pass interference calls in the entire NFL that year. And they were 50, 50, and 60 yards. Now think about that. There's not that many quarterbacks who can throw a ball 60 yards. You often at, the 45-yard line, they ask the question for, on a Hail Mary pass, can he even get it to the end zone? But Flacco could. And, Flacco got one of those called for 60 yards. The ball might not even travel that far, but it was a still a very impressive play. And the two of them, great combination on that ability. Not that they had a few catches too, but that was an additional value there that was always there with Torrey Smith.
That's a crazy stat for sure.
Let's talk up a little bit about his very first game where he had his first receptions, I should say, because he did actually have a target. A lot of people don't know this, but he had one target in that week one drubbing of Pittsburgh. 35-7. The Ravens, had seven takeaways in the game to nothing. If you ever, by the way, that game, that's the one I always recommend when I say you want to see the Ravens' pantheon of defensive stars, the big four of Nada, Lewis, Suggs, and Reed. Watch that game because all of them were involved in 2+ turnovers.
That game really is a crazy one. I always think of that one as really, like you said, kind of the perfect storm of all of those star defensive players. And we were really lucky to have that crew together for those years, for sure.
There is another game against the Panthers a few years later where on consecutive plays, Reed and Lewis had interceptions for touchdowns. There was also a special one, but nothing like that 2011 opener. And the Steelers fans and having to live through a day like that couldn't be more fun.
Definitely.
Smith went on to have 30 touchdowns, almost 4,000 yards in 4 years as a Raven, 3,691. So he averaged over 900 yards per year. One thing he didn't really do as well in was in yards per target, where he had only 7.4. So it was really a kind of a lower catch rate. He was taking some higher variation, longer throws were a bigger part of what he did. If you threw in his pass interference penalties with that, you'd probably get a significantly better result. Had to have, I would think, 300 yards of pass interference calls drawn in his career, probably.
Yeah, and it's actually funny because I agree, and kind of between the 20s, if you will, they didn't really look for him deep on some kind of lower percentage targets. But something I really appreciated about his game, probably less thought of with him, is he really was good in the red zone. He could actually find the end zone. He kind of saw him on a lot of slants down in the lower areas. There's a few kind of that come to mind, on that 5-touchdown game against the Bucks. From Flacco, he started it off early with a little slant in the red zone. And there was a game where against the Giants in 2012, where I really loved before this became a penalty, he had the slant and then the dunk on the crossbar was one of my favorite Torrey Smith moments as well. They don't let you do that anymore.
Yeah, I used to love that. The first guy that I remember really doing that a lot was Roger Carr. Would go up high in the 70s for the Colts, something that I remember fondly from my youth. But anyway, that was a lot of fun.
Deeper cut, but that's always a fun celebration. And I like when the guys now will kind of give you a more of a layup or a finger roll so they don't get the penalty.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not realize that there's a differentiation made there.
I think if you don't touch the goalpost itself, you're okay. I would have to dig a little deeper in the rule book on that one. Yeah.
Interesting. All right, well, let's go back. I promised we would talk about this a little earlier, and then I didn't follow through. But that first game where he had some receptions is that very memorable game at the St. Louis Rams at the time. And he'd only had one previous target, as I mentioned. Very first target of the game, Long ball goes up. It's kind of a classic Joe Walsh long ball, caught about 40, 42 yards downfield. Ends up going for 74 yards as he just runs away from a defender.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what I mentioned earlier, right? Almost like feel looks too easy when you watch the replay. It's just like, how did he get so open? How did he get over the top like that? But yeah, I mean, that was the moment, that game, that it was all in the first quarter, the first half, I believe. Definitely his first three targets. And it's just like, this is it. This is the guy. We might have found our wide receiver, or at least our deep threat.
Yeah, the second touchdown was more of a post play, as I recall it. It definitely actually grabbed the goalpost to slow himself down after the play. It's a visual I've kept from that game, but a 41-yard touchdown, so not quite as long. And then third one is kind of a contested play, as I recall, left side of the end zone, 18 yards, kind of reaching up over the defensive back and made the play, out leaping the defensive back, maybe is a better way to put it. But the three touchdowns in his first three NFL receptions was the first in NFL history had not happened since the merger before that. I don't know if they ever looked back and found another player who had done it pre-merger.
It's a pretty impressive accomplishment regardless. And just touching on that third touchdown, it kind of, in terms of a sign of things to come, those three touchdown catches, the third one is kind of what we're talking about, where I don't think of Smith as like a hands catcher. He's not the most talented kind of receiver of the ball, but he would come down with the ball and he could make some tough catches, a little more physical than I maybe remembered when I was kind of watching some of his old highlights and things like that. So that shorter touchdown kind of showed you a little bit of his complete game there, or more well-rounded game at least.
Yeah, Torrey Smith lists with 8.5-inch arms, which is 8.5-inch hands rather, which is a little small. I remember that being a big knock on him in the draft, that people thought his hands were too small to really play receiver. So maybe 9.5, 9.75 might have been more normal, but he was he did well with what he had, I thought.
A very unique player in a lot of ways. I was kind of what I kept coming back to. You don't think of him as a hands guy, but on a lot of these Flacco balls, he's kind of double catching, he's juggling, he's playing through contact. Maybe there's times where the defender has his arm in there and he's still able to kind of come down with it. That's a skill to me in terms of being a good receiver. And I also kind of, in a similar vein, was really thinking about kind of him with the ball in his hands, not the most elusive guy, but there's a lot of times where you could really get him on a straight line and he can really pull away from a defender or maybe break one tackle and get ahead of steam.
Yeah, very dangerous. Like kind of like Odell Beckham that way when Odell was a rookie, that, you know, a slant pass was always a lot of danger to go the distance.
Yeah, and I liked also, we'll get into one of my absolute favorite Smith moments, but you see him a little bit on the wide receiver screen. The favorite moment that I'm referring to is in that, speaking of a heartbreaking game, the AFC Championship in 2011. I completely remember that exact moment. Smith, I think it's in the third quarter, tight game. Smith takes a short pass, spins out kind of to the sideline, and is able to beat everyone down the sideline, beats Devin McCourty to the corner, extends the ball, and that game was really, for most of the game, one of my absolute favorite Ravens memories, which turned it into one of the most devastating ones. But that was kind of, to me, everything you wanted from Flacco in that game, everybody making contributions, Torrey Smith breaking away with the big play there. That was a really great one.
I said that it was near the end of quarter three. It put him up 17-16. I remember a little bit, and I also looked it over the last couple of days, but they went up 20-16, I think, on a Cundiff field goal to extend it. Then Tom Brady snuck one in. Tom Brady had a terrible game that day. Terrible. The Ravens.
That was that sequence on the sneak, though, where Lewis knew it was coming. Everybody in the stadium knew it was coming, and Brady was still able to punch it in there.
Yeah. And that was unfortunate to be sure. And then the Ravens, of course, had their chance. They had a couple chances to come back in that game. They had the football a couple times. They lost it on, a 4th-and-4 play or something on a pass that Pittick couldn't haul in. And then they, of course, had the Evans-Cundiff moments at the end of the game. Lee Evans did nothing for the Ravens as a receiver ever, except for in that game, which is really surprising because he was I think Flacco was something like 4 of 27 throwing the ball to Evans with 3 interceptions. So it was a 0.0 passer rating. Some sites will have it a little different because they do targets differently, but you know, it's just awful by any measure. I mean, way below the, and an incomplete on every effort. But the thing about Evans was he actually came to life on that drive to help the Ravens get down the field and get into position for him to not hold onto the football that was stripped by I forgot
Sterling Moore, one of the most painful sequences of my football watching career. And yeah, I've been thinking a lot about the 2011 game in the hindsight of our tough playoff defeat this year. I kind of keep going back to that moment and the Ray Lewis speech and really how rewarding it is to be a fan when they come all the way back the next year. And we'll get into some of that playoff run as well, I'm sure.
How do you rank the difficulty in taking the five major, I'll call it the five major playoff losses? And here are the five. The 08 loss in the AFC Championship at Pittsburgh. The 06 Colts loss in the divisional round. The 19 loss to the Titans in the divisional round after getting the bye. The 23 loss to Kansas City. Or the 2011 Condiff Evans game. Those are the five games. How do you rank them? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's a tough ranking. I always have really said 11 is the one that was most painful to me, despite in hindsight knowing how they come back, just because it really felt like that moment where Flacco had broken through against Brady. That was the heart of kind of the Brady dominance. That was the Gronk and Aaron Hernandez combo they had going that year, if I remember right. And for Joe to play the way he did, for all of the guys to kind of come through, I really loved that team. So I think that was the most painful. I would say 06 was such a kind of, again, a missed opportunity. It just didn't have that kind of single moment that you remember. So that kind of changes it in history. From there, I would go this year, 23. I mean, the thing about this year that was so painful to me, twofold. One, that they were really in that game, as horrible as it looked. They were, mm-hmm. I mean, if two things go differently, we're talking completely different. And the fact that the coaching staff and roster was just so loaded on this 23 team, to see them all walking out the door now is kind of added to that pain. You kind of knew it was this perfect team that had come together. From there, I would say 19, and then finishing with 08, even though it is against the Steelers there.
Okay, that's good. You were writing them down as we went. The 08 one is the least painful to me, even though it was the Steelers. That was horrible.
Great.
But that team was young, and you know, they overachieved. The problem is you don't get all that many chances. And you know, the 2000 Ravens, the nice thing about them is their very first opportunity to convert for a Super Bowl, they got it.
Exactly.
They were laser focused. You know, all the stuff about Billick making the schedule and everything was really special. I can't thank him enough about that. And that those memories from that entire run will stick with me for the life, the same way that the memories from these five losses will stick with me as well.
Yeah. And that was the thing that I felt about this 23 team. It really was feeling to me like they could have put their head down and just plowed through it. I get that there's some kind of battle scar or scar tissue that needs to be built up, and maybe we'll see a different Lamar in the playoffs going forward. But this year was, they're all painful, like you said, but this year really felt like a team of destiny, just watching them roll through the second half of that schedule and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's continue on some more Torrey Smith highlights from your chest.
Yeah, I mean, well, this leads us right really naturally into just the absolutely incredible, the Mile High Miracle game the next year. And it's actually funny because the Super Bowl run, Torrey Smith did not have a lot of catches through the playoffs in 2012, the Super Bowl season. But there was just absolutely nothing like those two catches in the first half against Champ Bailey. Both of them just kind of like really just blew my mind. I mean, you're watching Champ Bailey cover a Hall of Famer covering Torrey.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, But as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Torrey Smith, and you know, I love Torrey Smith as much as the next Ravens fan, but to watch him just completely torch him on two really incredible plays where he makes Bailey look like he doesn't have a chance going against him, especially the second one where he really climbs the ladder and gets over the top of him like that. You couldn't believe what you were seeing almost, it felt like, just the kind of dominant play back to back.
So it's been 12 years now, 11 years since that game was played. But the first one was a post pattern right between the hashes, as I recall it. And he just really outran Bailey, got very much behind him. And Bailey, you know, was towards the end of his career in terms of what he'd done. But he'd been a great defensive back for a long time, great corner for a long time. And you know, Smith just beat him. And that was, you know, great to see the speed. The second one is just one of the greatest adjustments on the football you'll ever see. He basically, with his speed being what it is, Bailey didn't really have the ability to, you know, use his hand on the receiver, look back for the football, do the things he would have to do without having probably to risk a pass interference call. And he overran the play. Smith body adjusted back to the inside, caught the ball into the end zone, touchdown. And it was only a minute or so left in the first half when that happened. It was a huge boost for the Ravens. Even that first half had been back and forth, you know, the punt return, then the two consecutive touchdowns for the Ravens, including the interception. And then they had two in a row as well on long manning drives. It looked like they had the momentum back. And then the Ravens tied it up at 21 at the half. Was definitely felt like a good place to be at that moment. And really was thankful that Torrey Smith had hauled in that football.
It really felt like he had really, the way he really snatched the momentum back going into the half. And of course, the second half opens with just a ridiculous mistake by special teams, letting Holiday get that second return touchdown. But on that play, that was really kind of something you saw a lot from Torrey Smith, actually, on his touchdown grabs, is he's able to use that deep speed, kind of threaten the back of the end zone, and then kind of cut inside, go high for the ball. And again, not grabbing it with the hands, but really kind of more of a basket catch almost. But you really saw that same kind of look from him quite a bit in the end zone. I would reckon he probably had maybe 5-10 touchdowns that looked very similar to that, where he's able to kind of cut back inside and go over the top.
Yeah. Others? I have a couple more that we haven't talked about yet. But
biggest one for me besides those was that same Super Bowl season, 2012, week 3, after his brother had died. And that, to me, was really just the moment. I was already a Torrey Smith fan by then, obviously, and a believer. But that was the moment where he's really, to me, like a Raven for life. I mean, I rewatched that game kind of in preparation for this. And just the emotion. I mean, he looks like dumbfounded that he's even on the field. It was such a surreal game. It was, at the same time, it's a rematch of this heartbreaking loss from the year before in the playoffs. Plus, you had the element of this just horrible personal tragedy. You can't even fathom. He tells everybody that he's on no sleep. It happened in the middle of the night. And I was watching, and I didn't really remember this. The first touchdown really makes a great touchdown, gets over the top, that same thing of Arrington telling him in the left corner, but there's a flag on the play. And Collinsworth thinks it might be offensive pass interference. There's a lot of discussion. The crowd doesn't really react to it. And it was almost like this delayed reaction, this where they're waiting for it to be called a touchdown. And then shortly after that, you kind of get the crowd chanting, Torrey, Torrey. Mm-hmm. And that was really a special moment.
Second touchdown was a beauty as well. Yeah. And a huge one in every way. The thing I remember most about that game, though, is Tucker kicked the field goal. So Torrey Smith brought him to 30-28 with about four minutes to go.
brought them close, but they still have. Yeah, it was a close game, and it was actually the Patriots. I didn't remember it this way. The Patriots were really in front the whole way that game. It was a pretty stressful game, actually.
Yeah, the Ravens were down 9 late. They got 8 or might have been 11. Whatever they were down, a lot late.
Two scores, yeah.
And the Ravens had to score a touchdown to come within 1, and then they had to get a stop, which they did. And they got the ball back, drove down the field, and a big play was a big pass interference play again for 27 yards to set him up inside the 10-yard line, and they just kind of knelt and they kicked the field goal. Tucker, you know, we didn't know the player he was. He was in the third game of his career at that point. Kicked the ball directly over the right upright, and Belichick obviously still claims it was no good, but he basically tried to tackle the officials as they left the field, saying, you know, come back and talk to me kind of thing, you know, and not his best moment.
Talk about a crazy scene in so many ways, right? First of all, classic Harbaugh fashion, just sitting on the ball, no attempt to go towards the end zone at all, just going to settle for the field goal. Maybe that's the right call in that situation.
Oh, yeah.
I would need to, right, exactly, have the ball last. Then not knowing Tucker, and if you watch it again, it's probably one of the worst kicks you'll ever see from Tucker, period. I can't remember too many worse kicks like that made or missed just because it was such a gimme. And then, right, the scene after the game, it was almost like I was saying with that first touchdown, where nobody really knew how to act in that game. Everybody wanted to be really kind of, it was such a big win. It was kind of the Torrey Smith situation was so crazy to be kind of watching that. And then, of course, Belichick trying to chase down the officials in kind of the scrum after the game. Yeah, very, very fun rewatch and pretty crazy game overall.
I've got one more from 2014. If you have it, just go ahead and I'll okay. Well, anyway, he did catch an 11-yard touchdown in the game against Pittsburgh in 2014 that they won in the playoffs.
Mm, yes.
I can't probably tell anybody who's become a fan in the last 10 years just what a big deal that was. And some of it stretches back way, way further back than that. I watched the Pittsburgh Pirates twice win game 7 in Baltimore. And that was very painful. You know, it's one of the first games I ever went to was that 7th game of the 71 series. And then they also lost game 7 in 79, lost 3 out of 4 at home. Those games were very painful. They you know, were twice eliminated by the Steelers in the playoffs in 75 and 76. The Colts were. The Ravens obviously had trouble with the Steelers in 08 and 10. Losing to them in those years, you know, the years you avoided them were kind of good, and they had trouble in the early Flacco years beating them at all, particularly in 08 where they lost 3 games to them. But this game, that 2014 game, ended the Pittsburgh playoff curse, and it was a very big one. They went in, they pretty well handed it to them, pretty well, 30-17. They led most of that game and put it away long before it was really over, and it still felt like being at the game. It felt like a game that the Steelers are still going to find a way to come back and win this game. I'm concerned about it to the very end. Don't have that same concern about the Steelers, even though they've had success against the Ravens recently. Yep. Don't have that same concern anymore.
It really was a crazy stretch where they just really had the Ravens number. And now that you mentioned 14 also, that 14 team was really good. I mean, we didn't mention it in the list of heartbreaking playoff losses, but the 14 loss to the Patriots was really a tough one too. And it kind of doesn't factor into the conversation about Torrey Smith. He didn't really have much of an impact in that game. Probably only 2 or 3 catches, the Patriots won.
Well, it's kind of his last play is one that people remember of him not really, you know, stripping away the interception.
Right.
If you had something that, but it was the 14 team, you know, was so close in terms of being there. And of course, the game that the Ravens played there and lost was the pre-Deflategate revelation game. And so it's very annoying that I think we've already had this discussed with the Justin Forsett discussion today. So it'll come up a couple of times on these pods, but definitely something that was a painful moment.
That team was really good. And yeah, some real painful moments in that game without wanting to step on your other points in another podcast. I will just say we kind of only touched on it really briefly, but in 11 against the Steelers, the Torrey Smith, that kind of last 20 seconds sequence there. It was really memorable because we still didn't really know kind of who he was going to be. Could he make the clutch play? I remember him as, at least, or came to remember him as. But that game, you know, that first drop is a really bad one in the end zone. And I really remember watching that. And for him to be the one that kind of comes through, redeems it, and has one of his signature kind of back of the end zone acrobatics there. Really, really nice moment for Smith early in his career.
I think I didn't think it was the easiest catch, but I'll say this. I think Collinsworth exactly called it correctly. And people beat on Chris Collinsworth all the time, and they don't like to hear the sound of his voice or whatever it is. They don't like the fact that he bought PFF, all of those things. But anyway, he said, you know, a catch has got to be made. It's not a simple catch. But it's a championship moment. You got to do that. And it was all true. It was one of those, he really nailed it correctly. I think from the receiver's perspective, he understood that was a missed opportunity for Smith, and came back, and it was kind of a body grab that he made for the game-winning touchdown, which wasn't, you know, the prettiest thing at all, but he went right to the ground with the football. There's never a question of it hitting. Just
got the knee down. Yeah. And that's kind of the thing that I always came back to. So I just kind of wanted to, I took like a little bit of a step back to think about Torrey Smith contextually in terms of Ravens receivers and also that draft. So that the draft he was taken in was famous wide receiver wise for AJ Green and Julio Jones, both going in the top six picks. And then there's not really another impact receiver in that entire draft, except for Randall Cobb, who has taken six picks after Torrey Smith and is still in the league somehow, which is pretty fascinating to me. But I mean, I think Smith was a great pick there. And it's an interesting kind of thing when you look at the context of Ravens wide receivers and their struggles with taking a first round receiver for this second round pick to have a really nice stretch of years. But then, of course, they don't, they choose not to re-sign him. He has a few more good years there, wins another Super Bowl with the Eagles down the road.
Yeah, Torrey Smith was not much of a player after he left the Ravens, to be fair. In 4 years, he had 1,550 yards, 7.4 yards per target. I actually think I announced that for his career amount. That's not true. With the Ravens, he was better than that, 8.3 yards per target when he was with the Ravens. That's really good. And, you know, he did have a good year at San Francisco in his first year, and then he was really quite bad after that. Yeah. Just very consistently good in his time with the Ravens.
And that's the thing, when your key trait is that blazing straight line speed, of course that's going to go, and clearly it did. And he bounced around a little bit. Just in terms of talking about Torrey Smith as a Raven, one of my favorite Ravens, I also love that he still calls Baltimore his home. He's done some really amazing things in the community. He's just a likable guy, and to me is really a Raven for life. And it was funny to look at the Ravens' first round receiver history, because they don't actually have much of a track record of taking a receiver in the second. Torrey Smith is actually one of the only ones. And they follow up the Torrey Smith era with a first round pick on Breshad Perriman, of course. So right back where we started. And then the last few years have had a little more success, although that depends on your opinions on Hollywood and Rashad Bateman, I guess, to see how successful they've been the last few years.
Well, Taylor and Clayton, it looks, hopefully, you know, Zay Flowers is going to be the complete mold breaker in terms of that. But it hasn't been great. I mean, DaCosta says you need to continue taking big swings at wide receiver. I think he's right. I think it's one of the positions where you have to take players in the first round if they become available, because it's such a high barrier of entry position. You have to figure out where you can, how you can get that done. So much like left tackle, but not as extreme, but much like left tackle. So we'll see. We'll see how they move forward this year.
I had one more interesting thing just to look at, kind of the receiving core that he was a part of, because you really see the shift in the Ravens and in the league a little bit. That 2011 year, it was just Bolden and Torrey Smith, you know, like we talked about, absolutely nothing from Lee Evans, a little bit from like Laquan Williams that year. I know one of the podcast favorites. Tandon Doss a little bit, same draft class as Smith. Yeah. But then the next year they bring on Jacoby Jones, and it really slid into place as this really nice kind of three-headed monster where everybody had a nice role. You could put Bolden in kind of that power slot role where he's running the seam down the middle, especially in that playoff run, making some nice physical catches there. And then, of course, they get rid of Bolden and struggle to replace that production with the likes of like Marlon Brown or Kamar Aiken down the line eventually too.
Yeah, and each of those guys seemed like a viable, cheap replacement in terms of who they were, and it was an 80-20 decision, in particular with Bolden. I'm afraid, you know, the Bolden deal
reminds me so much of what's happened over the last couple of days with Morgan Moses is that we're recording this it's the 13th or the 15th here. I'm having trouble.
Friday the 15th. Yep.
The 15th. There we go. So the Morgan Moses release is just happened. The trade.
Would have been a release.
It might have been. It's very similar to the Bolden trade. Bolden, they got a sixth round salvage value for him, but don't make no mistake. It was a cost cutting move. In the case of Moses, it really is a cost cutting move. They can't justify it. They certainly cannot justify it based on how much they're going to have to pay him this year, I don't think. And I know it's one of the things that makes me shake my head, because you have a good player who's making very little money relative to what the barrier of entry is at the position. But the Ravens know something. They know something about his current health status or whatever that's made him do that. But anyway, the Bolden and Moses moves to me very similar, and an eerie, foreboding similarity they have.
I agree, and they clearly didn't get it right on Bolden. Bolden, like Torrey Smith, we were saying, aged not so well because his speed went. Bolden never had any speed, and so he actually, his game aged quite well. He was always boxing people out, being a really physical player. But the Bolden move actually reminds me a lot of something that happened, I think, yesterday or last night with the Chargers getting rid of Keenan Allen. Same thing. And you see these things without context. It doesn't make any sense that Bolden or anybody like that would be traded for a late round pick, when really the context is, of course, you need to have the money on the other end to sign them to the deal they're looking for.
Yeah. I don't want to do this to whoever, because I don't want to beat on fans for doing this. But you can't have nothing ends a meaningful roster discussion more than comments like, I don't care about the cap, or put it on the credit card, or just
the cap is real.
Is the central barrier to everything. And yeah, the cap isn't real.
Especially when you're fortunate enough to pay a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. I think that's kind of the lesson that everybody needs to remember, is that all of this is surrounded by year one of the cap, the new Jackson contract. And I'll be curious. I mean, I think late, first round wide receiver might be the way they end up going this year. It'll be very interesting to see, kind of tying back to the Torrey Smith and the Ravens wide receiver conversation.
Well, I hope they decide they do actually need five offensive linemen to play with Jackson in total. So I want a left tackle, and I want two offensive linemen for sure. And I wouldn't be upset if they drafted three. That's the point we're at. It's very difficult for me to believe that they think Daniel Falele is going to be the right tackle that Morgan Moses was.
I agree. And I think they'll probably surprise us with a veteran signing or somebody that gets released late in the process, potentially. Something I do know is it's going to take a while for us to really see the full picture of what DaCosta has in mind here.
All right. Fair enough. Always great talking football with you, Ben. Tell folks where they can reach you online.
On Twitter, talking a little bit of football at Classic Michal. Ken, thanks again for having me on. It's great doing this chat.
Always, always a pleasure. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on, do a recollection show like Ben has, or any other idea you might have. All that is required is for you to be passionate about the topic you want to bring to the air. I have very much an open mic approach during the off season. I have less flexibility to do that during the regular season and record extra shows. So this is the time, folks. Hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. Ben, thanks again for coming on.
It's a lot of fun, Ken. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.